You're listening to Civic from the San Francisco Public Press. On this edition, we'll learn about new data from a community health survey that suggests people who live and work in the area around the highly contaminated Hunters Point shipyard may have been exposed to toxins.
They have all these health problems. They realize, wait a minute, we've been working next door to a highly, highly toxic, literal nuclear waste dump. So far, everybody who has participated in this study has shown in their bodies elevated levels of some of the toxic materials known to be in the shipyard soil.
I'm Laura Wenis, and this is Civic. San Francisco's Hunters Point shipyard is a Superfund site. The Navy built and repaired ships there from World War II until 1974. Shipyard workers dumped industrial solvents and other waste, buried contaminated machinery, and disposed of radioactive substances left over from science experiments associated with Cold War nuclear tests. But it wasn't until 2004 that the Navy admitted publicly that Hunters Point was a massive toxic and radioactive waste dump. And it wasn't until just recently that a community health survey was funded to see whether people who live and work in the area might be experiencing health effects from toxins. Investigative journalist Chris Roberts, who's been covering the shipyard for years, looked into some of the preliminary results of that survey and published his work in the San Francisco Public Press in a story titled "Toxic Metals Found in Shipyard Neighbors, But Source Still Unknown." So your most recent story takes us first to a place called a research animal colony, a UCSF research facility. What is this facility and where is it?
In order to conduct all kinds of research on biology, on pharmaceuticals, and things like this, any major research institution needs a lot of test subjects, and these test subjects are animals. And in the case of the University of California at San Francisco, they have a couple different facilities throughout the city. And one of their major ones is in a neighborhood called Hunters Point in the southeastern part of San Francisco. This UCSF animal colony is at 75 Crisp Road in Hunters Point, and it used to be part of the San Francisco Naval Shipyard at Hunters Point. And the shipyard was also home to a lab, a radiation research lab called the Naval Radiological Defense Laboratory. This building is also located, in a literal sense, on top of an industrial landfill in which the Navy dumped all kinds of extremely nasty stuff, including industrial waste that would have petroleum byproducts. There were pesticides, heavy metals, and in addition to that, radioactive material, including both radium dials, ship markers, and other things painted with radium-226, which we know decomposes into radon gas, and it appears as well animal carcasses used in lab research may have been dumped there as well. So yeah, this building is, and part of this landfill we know is actually underneath UCSF property. So UCSF got this building in 1978, a couple years after the Navy left Hunters Point, and they've been using it ever since.
And that's not the only thing that's happening with the shipyard, right? I mean, there's so much controversy and so much news about this shipyard piece of land because it's also being used to build housing, right? I mean, isn't there a huge development going on this site?
Yeah, so the evidence absolutely shows that the Hunters Point shipyard is still contaminated. It is still an EPA Superfund site, which is a list of the most polluted areas throughout the United States. For the last 30 years now, or for most of the last 30 years, Hunters Point has also been the site of the biggest redevelopment project in San Francisco history, or at least since the 1906 earthquake. The shipyard itself is about 450 acres, and it is the only parcel of that size left available for development throughout all of San Francisco. And our current housing crisis has only exacerbated the need for new housing. And there may someday be, both at the Hunters Point shipyard and across a little narrow inlet at Candlestick Point, there may be as many as 10,000 new homes, or at least that's the plan. And so far, there's about 450 homes built here up on a hillside. Those homes are built and those homes are occupied. And the landfill and other highly toxic parts of the shipyard are where amenities like open space and some restaurants, and maybe a school and businesses and things, as well as some more dense housing, some high rises, are, at least for now, planned to be built as soon as this land can be declared clean or safe enough to be transferred over from the Navy to the city for development.
So now with that in mind, let's get back to what your most recent story showed, which is essentially the story of two key people who worked at this research animal colony. They're John Miranda and Robert Little, and they're both retired, both in their 50s.
That's right.
They both have a slew of health problems, and they suspect that their health problems have something to do with their work. Why?
In the case of both of these individuals, these are active people. Both these gentlemen were sort of all-purpose handymen at Building 830 at the UCSF Animal Colony. And in Robert Little's case, he is a non-smoker, but then in his 50s, he developed asthma. And you really only develop, at quote-unquote, develop asthma at that stage of your life if you're exposed to some sort of airborne pollutant, airborne contaminant. The most common one, of course, is cigarette smoking, but this man's never smoked cigarettes in his life. He doesn't know what it's about. And both he and his coworker, John Miranda, they both worked at Building 830, the UCSF Animal Colony, since the early 1990s. And in that time, and they both left around the same time in the early 2010, in the early teens. And so in that 20-year period, there was intense activity at the shipyard landfill, the most heavily contaminated part of the entire Hunters Point shipyard. There was earth moving activities. The Navy was putting a soil cap on top of the really nasty stuff, but in so doing, dust would blow up. Dust would blow from the landfill and coat Building 830. Workers' cars were coated with dust. The interior of the animal colony, and there's multiple rooms in there. There's about like a dozen rooms. The Little and Miranda told me that they would clean dust from there all the time. They'd be outside, they'd be cutting grass, painting, breathing in this dust, and not once did they ever have any kind of personal protective equipment. And so when they are getting ready to retire, they have all these health problems. And they have really no idea, no direct idea, or no definitive idea of what caused these health problems, but then they sort of put two and two together and they realize, wait a minute, we've been working next door to a highly, highly toxic, literal nuclear waste dump. I mean, this is like, that's not hyperbole. There is nuclear waste in that landfill. And we've been working next to this thing for 20 years. We've been breathing this dust. Maybe is there a connection?
Right, and now it seems that they have a little bit of evidence because these two men participated in a community biomonitoring survey. This is an effort sponsored by the environmental justice group Green Action with money from the David and Lucille Packard Foundation. What happened in this study? What were they looking at?
Right, and I think it's important to note as well that despite decades of work at Hunters Point to get the shipyard ready for redevelopment, there's never been any real study as to what kind of impact that level of contamination has had on the surrounding community. People have been asking, have been pleading with the Navy, with the city for years for some of the money that's being spent on getting Hunters Point quote unquote clean. I mean, the Pentagon has spent $1 billion to date on environmental remediation, and not once has any of that money gone to study, to any sort of health, even a health survey, which is what this is. So that's the important context. Many, many people for a long, long time have complained of cancers, of thyroid problems, of asthma, all kinds of health afflictions which are consistent with exposure to industrial toxic material as well as radioactive material. But it's always been anecdotal. It's always been, well, we think the shipyard is making us sick, but we don't really know.
And nobody bothered to spend money on studying that.
And that's right. And not only, but it's also important to note that people have tried. Earlier this year, a researcher from UCSF applied for a grant from the National Institutes of Health to do a similar study, and she was rejected. So that's the necessary context is that in this knowledge gap, there have been a couple of key people. You might call them advocates, you might call them watchdogs, but one of them is a physician who actually got her medical degree from UCSF, and her name is Dr. Ahimsa Porter Sumchai. And after years of trying to raise awareness about this phenomenon, as you said, Dr. Sumchai, with sponsorship from Green Action and money from the Packard Foundation, started this biomonitoring survey. And it's really very simple. Individuals who either live or work within a mile of the shipyard are eligible to participate. And after a rather lengthy interview, they give a sort of intake interview in which, you know, their work and lifestyle habits are discussed. They give a urine sample, and the urine sample is then sent off to a diagnostic laboratory, in this case, Genova Diagnostics in North Carolina, which is the same kind of lab that, if you're lucky enough to have a primary care physician, that's the kind of lab that your primary care physician might send a urine sample off for analysis if you're pre-diabetic or something like that. And so far, everybody who has participated in this study has shown in their bodies elevated levels of some of the toxic materials known to be in the shipyard soil.
Wow. How many people were looked at?
So since the story has run, there's been a couple more. And I checked in with Dr. Sumchai recently. And so far, 30 people have participated. She wants to enroll 100 before the end of the year. And half of it, well, roughly half, 14 people are either current or former workers at the UCSF Animal Colony.
And the rest lived in the area?
That's right.
So what do these findings really tell us so far? I mean, that almost everybody or everybody who took part in this survey had elevated levels of these toxins in their body. Does that not send a pretty clear message?
Well, in the words of Dr. Sumchai, it's highly suggestive. Mm-hmm. It's applying something like Occam's razor. If we knew that there was a source of manganese or uranium or vanadium, these are some of the industrial and radioactive elements that have appeared in at least some of the results. Yeah, we might think, well, okay, if there's a lot of manganese in me and I work right next door to a source of manganese, doesn't that then make it pretty clear that that's where it's from? But that's not how science works. So right now, all we know is that it's highly suggestive. And Dr. Sumchai herself says, you know, more study is needed. But this is a data point that says something might be going on here. We need to look into this further. And we spoke for the story, we spoke to Dr. John Balmes. He is a UCSF professor, an epidemiologist. And he as well says, look, this might mean that they're onto something, but we just don't know enough yet. But I think everyone can agree that it is a call for more study, for more data, but it absolutely is, at the least, highly suggestive.
Well, we've just talked about the number of people who were tested. Are there other limitations of this study that kind of might put a damper on what takeaways we can have from it?
There are a couple things, yes. So when you send urine off for analysis, the elements are looked for, and there's a reference range. If there's a higher level of these elements in your urine above the reference range, that's what sends up a red flag. And these reference range values are not, these are sort of default values that are meant to be representative for the entire population. They're not meant to be representative for someone who lives at Hunter's Point or someone who works at Hunter's Point. How those values would be different, we just don't know, or at least we don't know for the purposes of the study. So in an ideal world, you would have reference ranges calibrated specifically for Hunter's Point. As it is, according to Dr. Sumchai, these reference ranges are calibrated for like the average middle-aged white woman.
Who is not who necessarily lives near the shipyard.
No, and as a matter of fact, the Hunter's Point has historically been a working class community of color. It has, for a long, long time, it was predominantly black. It no longer is, as impacts of gentrification are felt. And it's also important to note that the new home buyers at the San Francisco shipyard, the market rate condominiums, those skew whiter and a little bit more Asian as well. So the reference range is one potential limitation. The other one is, even though Genova Diagnostics is a well-known lab, a reputed lab that many healthcare professionals would use, their results might need to be double checked. And so maybe in an ideal world, you would send the urine samples off to, say, for example, the CDC's lab in Atlanta. But the CDC, of course, is busy with COVID-19. And it's also not entirely sure who would determine the reference range values for a study in the Hunter's Point neighborhood. But even with these limitations, the data is at the least suggestive that this is probably a phenomenon that should be studied further.
Yeah, and then the question comes up for me, what do the various responsible organizations have to say about this? Because it's not like it's a surprise that there's radioactive and toxic waste on the site. And it's not also as though nothing has been done about it at all. Like you said, the Pentagon has spent about $1 billion to remove industrial and radioactive waste from the shipyard. There have been containment efforts like soil covers and concrete walls to contain waste that won't be removed. And you reported
right.
that the Navy, the EPA, and local health and elected officials have repeatedly assured residents that the shipyard is safe. You asked the Navy, you asked public health officials, and you asked UCSF for comment on this biomonitoring survey. What did they say?
In a word, they said that everything's fine, nothing to see here. Of course, they couched the language a little bit differently. San Francisco Department of Public Health actually said that they didn't review any of the data. They didn't look at it. They just didn't have time because of COVID-19. They said that normally they would send these results off to the state and the state would take a look at it. It's important to note that, though, that these results started coming in January and February before the pandemic began. The Navy also said that they did not review in any detail the initial results. They didn't tell us why, and they also didn't respond to follow-ups, but they did say that they have many mitigation methods, including dust mitigation, air sampling. There's also methane gas known to be in the shipyard landfill, and that's monitored. And then, yeah, there are a bunch of institutional controls. The concrete wall that you mentioned, that is meant to prevent waste from the landfill from getting into the bay. The soil cap that you mentioned, that's meant to keep all of the radioactive and industrial contamination in situ. It's just supposed to stay there undisturbed in perpetuity. But at the same time, it's known that there are wildlife like burrowing owls that are digging in that dirt and potentially disturbing that dirt. And even with all these mitigation methods, dust still gets over on Building 830, over on UCSF workers' cars and in their workstations. And UCSF did go over there in 2018, and they said they made a survey, they took wipes of some of this dust, and they didn't find anything wrong. But critics of that survey say that it just wasn't substantial enough And furthermore, we spoke with a worker who's still at UCSF. This worker asked not to be identified because they fear for their job. They fear retaliation. And this worker told us that after several years of pretty steady work right outside their building on the other side of a chain link fence, after pretty steady work, all of a sudden they noticed that work stopped. And it was only when the work stopped and thus the dust literally settled that UCSF came and did the survey. UCSF didn't address that. We asked them, and that wasn't something that they were willing to address. But if that's true, that might also cast doubt on the UCSF sampling of whether or not that actually was an accurate reflection of what might be in the air when people are working at the animal colony.
I want to ask you also about another story that one of the workers told you about. Little and Miranda, the two men who are named who took part in this survey, they have a couple of interesting stories about working on the site, and one of them involves witnessing a fire on the site next door. Can you tell us about what they observed?
Sure. So in August of 2000, the full extent of contamination in the Hunters Point landfill and in the surrounding area, that's still not yet known. That's still being studied. The story goes that there may have been some squatters or maybe some folks without homes actually camping out on the surface of the landfill. Maybe they were trying to cook, maybe they were trying to keep warm, but whatever. Folks living out on the landfill have been blamed for a fire that broke out there in August of 2000. And this fire actually burned for a long, long time underneath the the landfill itself, underneath the ground, was on fire for more than a month. The landfill caught fire, and meanwhile, everyone's at work at Building 830, and Little and Miranda told me they went outside. And in their case, though, they knew something was wrong because this fire is not in orange, not in red and yellow. It's purple, it's green, it's sort of blue. And these are all signs that some sort of toxic, maybe synthetic material is on fire. Like that's a chemical fire. And then they left, but then they came back the very next day and they found out later that, yeah, the fire kept burning underneath and no one ever told them what was in the fire. And they also say that no one from UCSF ever told them what was in the landfill either.
And did they ever receive any kind of protective equipment or even any kind of follow-up about potential exposure to toxic smoke?
Never. No, that's been consistent, is that they said that they never heard another word about it. They say that they always heard stories that there was nasty, nasty stuff in the shipyard, but they kind of dismissed it. They sort of said, no, that sounds like a story, because the official word, according to them. It's important to note that we spoke to one current worker, and they said they are using PPE, and they progressed from a surgical mask to an N95 mask to a respirator. And this is equipment that they themselves provided. They were experiencing breathing difficulties, asthma symptoms as well. And they say that once they started wearing this PPE, their symptoms started to improve.
Let's talk a little bit more about how the Navy and other, you know, officials have been talking about this site. Because if I recall correctly, it took until 2004 for the Navy to admit that, yes, this was essentially a toxic and radioactive waste dump. And then there was the whole scandal with the contractor that did soil sampling that was supposed to prove that the site is safe. But if I recall, the majority of those samples were actually falsified, or the majority of those results.
It took a long, long time for the Navy to provide a full account of the use of radioactive material at the site. They really only did that after SF Weekly published a long series in 2001 and 2002. Accessing recently declassified records that indicated that the use of radioactive material there at the shipyard was far more widespread and far more significant than the Navy initially admitted. The Navy says, okay, yes, there's a lot of radioactive material there, all kinds of radioactive material. And you know what? We don't really even know where all that might be because the records are bad. That admission is made. And then a series of environmental contractors are paid a significant amount of money to do this investigative work that is made necessary due to shoddy record keeping. And one of them is a major multinational corporation called Tetra Tech. And after a series of company whistleblowers, former Tetra Tech employees come forward to say, hey, listen, this work can't be trusted. The Navy did a review and the EPA looked at it as well. And it appears that, yes, as much as 97% of Tetra Tech's work at the shipyard could have been fraudulent, could have been falsified. Two Tetra Tech managers have pleaded guilty to fraud and are serving federal jail terms or federal prison terms. And Tetra Tech has also been sued by the United States Department of Justice for its alleged role in this fraud.
So now there are several lawsuits going against the Navy, against Tetra Tech, I think also against the developer. There's this long, complicated history, and now there's finally some information available about how people who live and work in the area might be affected. What happens next?
Well, so the first thing that will happen is that the biomonitoring survey will continue. We'll see if 100 people also have elevated levels of these toxic materials known to be in shipyard soil. If that's the case, then that would be extremely suggestive. And if it's not, then there will still probably be louder and more repeated calls to study this issue more closely. What's interesting is that we reached out to the elected official, to the member of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors who represents Bayview Hunters Point, District 11 Supervisor Shimon Walton. We asked him to talk for this story, and he said he had no information. And so we're not really sure what that is indicative of. Like, maybe there's not a lot of political will to scrutinize the shipyard project. Because the other thing that is important for context is that there is an incredible amount of political will to get the shipyard developed. This has been a pet project of Willie Brown, the former mayor of San Francisco, for more than two decades. Willie Brown, in his post-mayoral career, actually went to China to drum up EB-5 investors in the shipyard project, and he's recently signed on to be a PR person for the shipyard project. This has been something that both Senator Dianne Feinstein, as well as Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi, have both convinced fellow members of Congress to devote money to shipyard cleanup. So, yeah, there's an incredible amount of momentum behind the Hunters Point Shipyard Redevelopment Project. Very few things other than the Tetra Tech fraud scandal have created much of a pause. And so we'll just have to wait and see if the biomonitoring survey slows things down any. But history indicates that this thing is going to happen one way or the other.
Well, Chris, thanks for keeping on top of it, and thanks for telling me about the work that you've been doing.
Thank you.
That was journalist Chris Roberts. Read his latest story about the biomonitoring survey at sfpublicpress.org. I'm Laura Wenis, and you've been listening to Civic.
Civic is a production of the San Francisco Public Press. Host and reporter, Laura Wenis. Producer and contributor, Mel Baker. Our theme music is by John Dillon. Thanks for listening.